Fourth and final hour here on this Thursday afternoon. Don't forget, Honky Tonk Hat Trick brought to you by Bud Light is back tonight. Join Nick Cale from 5 until 6:30 at Rippey's prior to Predators showdown with Toronto. While you're there, register to win a pair of tickets to the game, passes to the Bud Light Zone. You may win a VIP hockey experience. Be sure to stop by Tootsie's, Rippey's, and Honky Tonk Central before Predator weekday home games for specials on Bud Light. You may be asking, what is the VIP hockey experience? It's a pair of tickets to an upcoming Predators home game, dinner for two before the game, and a ride on the Zamboni during intermission. Stop by Rippey's after every Predators home game for two-for-one drinks until they close. OVC will be going back to Evansville for the next 2 years for their men's and women's basketball tournament. That was announced today. Louisville has said they will interview Xavier's head coach Chris Mack for their opening. We will find out if indeed that is an attractive job opening right now, or is there still some dark clouds that coaches are saying with good jobs, thanks, but no thanks. A couple of years ago, I would be standing in line, but not now. Gary Parrish also reporting that Celtics assistant coach, former Kentucky basketball player Walter McCarty, will become the next head coach, speaking of Evansville, in Evansville. So Evansville will hire Walter McCarty, OVC, getting the men's and women's basketball tournament in Evansville the next 2 years. So Evansville at the center of a couple stories here locally. Minor league baseball, Willie. I don't know. We have not discussed this yet, and I don't know if a lot of people have seen this by now. It's been out there for, what, a couple weeks now? And I think some of this they were trying to implement in spring training, but they are going to make some pretty drastic changes, some sweeping changes in the minor league game. Of course, the Sounds about to kick off their season at First Tennessee Park, but you're going to see, we've talked about it a lot, the pace of the game, the speed of the game. And some of this you just can't control in baseball, but they're going to try. They're going to try to speed it up for sure. There's going to be a pitch clock, and it will be set for 15 seconds. A pitcher will have 15 seconds with the clock. That's with nobody on. I guess with a runner on, they'll get 20 seconds if there's a runner on base. But a 15-second pitch clock. They're also going to limit mound visits to 6 per game. That's at the AAA level, 8 at the AA level, 10 at Class A, and no limits for rookie ball.
Now, think about that. 6 per game. That's not like, is that really going to, are they, how many times do they go out there?
I don't know.
The course of a game.
I would say,
if you can't get through a game without 6, I would,
well,
think,
what do you think the number, I have no idea.
If you really want to speed
up the game,
what do you
think the average
is? I think you make it more like 5 or 4, because you have to have a catcher or a pitching coach make a decision. Am I going to spend one of mine right now? And if I am in the third inning, then I may not go out there if I know I only got 4 or 5. If I've got 6, heck, I'm going out there. I mean,
right, in a 9-inning game. Well,
really,
I mean, I know you can't, you don't know if it's going to go extras or not.
I mean, I hope this is just the first step in the process. I do think,
but they had to have some hard numbers, right, to come up with those numbers.
But I don't think those numbers are going to curtail the time of the game. I really am disappointed with the guy on second base in the extra inning game.
That's where I was going next.
That's the next one, right?
Now, they're going to put a runner on second in extra innings. They're going to put a runner on second. I guess it was the last batter, right, in the previous inning. Is that? I think that's how they worded it.
Yeah, I guess so. I just think that stinks. Now,
it says extra innings will begin with a runner on second base. The runner at second will be the player in the batting order position previous to the leadoff batter of the inning, or a substitute for that player.
I hate that rule. I don't like that at all. Let's work very hard to make the first 9 innings go faster. Let's not worry about a game that goes to extra innings. Now, the one silver lining, Jeff Hem made this point, voice of the Sounds, that I hadn't considered, is in the minor leagues, you do, if you get into a 12-13 inning game, you blow out your bullpen and you can really hurt a pitching staff. But that, to me, is a separate category than just the speed of the game. I think it's fun. When you hit an extra inning game, play the extra innings. But let's make the nine innings, let's make the, whenever you're playing, let's make the flow of the game faster. I don't like the 10th inning thing. Now, as far as mound visits, I think that is a critical part. And the college game is really messed up with it, with the mound visits and the signals from the dugout. It's a slower process with signals from the dugout to the catcher, relay to the pitcher. The infielders have to get the signals.
Can you imagine a pitch clock in the college game?
They have had it.
Well,
but that's why I think you've got
to. I'm saying these rules. Could you imagine?
I think 15 seconds is still.
And they're not even close to pitching in 15 seconds. Let's be honest.
Yes, they are.
They are?
15 is a long time. 15 seconds is a long time.
The catcher, he's got to look over in the dugout. Then he looks back. Looks at the pitcher. Then he's got to look back in the dugout. And then he's getting more signs. And then he's giving the signs to the pitcher. It takes longer than 15 seconds.
If you're really going to try it, let's try something like 10. Let's try 10 seconds from the time that the batter's in the box. When does the clock start? That's the other thing I would like to know. Because I think the hitter and the pitcher in the dugout, they will adapt. If they have to be quicker, they'll get quicker.
It will begin when their windup or their motion is set for the – wait a minute. See, let me read it word for word here. Let's see. 15 seconds to begin their windup or the motion to come to the set position when no runners are on base.
That's an eternity.
So it must begin in his windup or the begin the motion.
That's plenty of time. That's not going to mess it up. When there's – the game slows down when there are people on base. The game should not slow down when there's nobody on base. So that clock should be
okay,
10 seconds.
Okay, let me take a look. Okay.
With nobody on base, I think.
I'm trying to sift through all
of it. You can't get your pitch off in 10 seconds if there's nobody on base?
The timer shall start when the pitcher has possession of the ball in the dirt circle surrounding the pitcher's rubber. The catcher is in the catcher's box and the batter is in the dirt circle surrounding home plate.
10 seconds. Don't need 15. With nobody on base? Now, people on base, there's more going on. You got to have your defensive strategy. You got to hold the runner on. That's a different story. But with nobody on base, let's go 10. It's all experimental anyway, right? We're talking about the minor leagues. And the players will adapt. I think that is – I'm really curious to see if this has any effect on the games. But to me, you don't touch – the rules of baseball and how to win a baseball game. You gotta score a run. You can't put a guy on second base.
If the pitcher fails to begin his windup or begin the motion to come to the set position in 15 seconds with no runners on base or 20 seconds with a runner on base, a ball will be awarded to the count on the batter.
I want to see it in action before I – totally am judge, jury, executioner, but I'm glad they have a clock. I've never in the past I've seen clocks with nobody on base and then they turn the clock off when somebody gets on base. But I like the idea of limiting the mound visits. Let's make it the mentality of a coach in football or basketball that has a certain amount of timeouts. Let's limit the timeouts. Baseball is brutal with that. Brutal. This is not an instructional.
You can get a game under 3 hours. You've done something good.
It's because and they stop the game a lot to have mound visits and even third base coach calling time to come out and talk or go down the line and talk to his batter about, hey, we got guys in first and second here. Darren, there's one out. I'm going to have you bunt here. That should not happen. You should not be able to do that, I think. If we're trying to speed the game up, that's what we got
to
do.
I agree. Let's go to Rick. Rick, what's up?
Hey, guys. A little bit along the same vein as far as rules are concerned. I've been wanting to ask this for a while. It's a little out of place. Since the Predators have come into the league, there's been a series of major changes to the rules to try to increase offense. I guess back from the trapezoid rule to the two-line passes. So two questions. Which rule do you think has improved offensive output the most? And secondly, do you think Poile being on the rules committee had a kind of a heads up that this was coming and he reconfigured our team for these future rules.
Okay, Rick, thank you for the phone call.
I think the contact being allowed is the biggest factor, and I would put that in to
back to goalie interference?
No, I will say I will equate it into this category. In hockey, it's the clutching and the grabbing allowed by the referees. And this year, you notice what they did. They took away the ability for a player to give you a subtle hook, mm-hmm. right, or a little slash on the hands. They used to let that go. They're not letting that go anymore. So the players who have the skill and the speed have the freedom to go do their thing. I think that's the biggest thing that has made the change. Just like in the NBA. The NBA got into a series of games where it was the bad boys and Pat Riley's Knicks, and it was getting jammed up. They said, hey, no more hand-checking. If you want to drive and you get hand-checked, it's a foul.
Don't forget Mike Fratello. His teams
love
to win in the 70s.
Oh, my goodness. They had some games in the 70s.
74-70, brutal. NBA final.
It was brutal. So that and in football, it's the amount of contact you let the defender have with the wide receiver, right? That is the biggest thing that I think you can have an effect on the game in terms of scoring. You want to increase scoring, limit the defender's ability to hand check, grab, clutch. All three sports are sort of the same. So I think that's the answer to his question, and I think that's opened up the scoring a little bit more. Now, teams adapt. Teams always will try to figure out ways to defend.
That'll never end, though.
Yeah, but that's why guys like Victor Arvidsson and Tyler Johnson for the Tampa Bay Lightning and pick the guys who are a little smaller, they're more able to do their thing on the ice now than they were able to 20 years ago because those guys just got grabbed and pulled.
Well, they just got pulled down to the ice.
Pulled down to the ice. Drilled, you know, physically pounded.
And let's be honest, it's something Victor Arvidsson had to learn when he first came in the league, because what were we talking about him at the very beginning stages? One, we were all blown away, like, wow, watch out for this guy, at the time 38.
Yeah.
But we also talked about, man, he's going to have to figure out how to stay upright because he was getting pulled out. He spent a lot of time down on the ice, right?
Yeah, and he still does.
No, back then. It felt like he was spent half the time down on the ice and half the time up. That's not the case anymore because he's obviously figured all that out. But like you said, going back to the old rules, a guy like him wouldn't even have a chance because they would just literally shut him down. They'd drag him, pull him down and lay on top of him. And, I mean, he would never be in consideration for putting up the numbers just because of the style that they allowed. Now, what I said going back to the goalie interference, do you think it's helped that they've allowed at least contact? Remember before you couldn't make any if there was a breath in the crease, you could, you know, no, right?
Well,
now
they used to have a rule that if your skate was in the blue ice, even if you didn't touch the goalie.
Right. No contact. Skate in the blue ice.
That made a big difference. That was like the early years of the Predators is when they put that rule in there. That was kind of
crazy. But I'm saying now that they've opened it up some, don't you think that's helped too? Because look, Mike Fisher was in the crease. Mike Fisher had contact and in the crease, and they still counted the goal.
Yeah. And I do think there is a general rule in any sport that the fans want to see scoring. The fans don't want to see great defense. The fans appreciate great defense, but they want to be entertained and they want to see scoring. There are a lot of NBA players. Will Perdue used to make this point a lot. When Steph Curry was rising, that in the 90s, when Michael Jordan was at his best, they allowed a lot more contact, right? And that's a guy like Steph Curry, imagine him going up against the physical Knicks teams or the physical Pistons teams. They got away with a lot more, grab the jersey a little bit, do a little hand checking. Could Steph Curry be Steph Curry in those rules?
But he could push off back then.
But is he strong enough to push off?
Know.
See, a guy who's
could.
A little smaller, like
Michael
Steph
could.
Steph Curry's a little smaller, mm-hmm. not as big and strong, just like Victor Arvidsson and some of these smaller hockey players that are flourishing now. It's a fair point.
I think, though, with anything, when we always have the debate of errors, that, you know, decades, players adapt. He would figure out, you know, he would know that was going to – he would just – when you have that talent and you can shoot it like – they also didn't have guys that had that release back then either.
Sure. Oh, I'm not
– Right? Everybody, when we're always trying to compare eras, I mean, right. you have to realize –
Like when you watch Bob Cousy right, in the 50s, I mean, he's doing stuff that nobody –
If he played 30 years later, he would adapt. I mean, you have to adapt to your surroundings, and it would be different. You can't pretend like he's going to play the exact same way in a different style. I mean, that's what it is, and Steph Curry would have figured it out. But you're right. I mean, I understand the premise of what you're saying. I mean, it would have been different because they got away with so much more. And that is what's helped the game, if you talk about the NBA, where they've let their stars be the stars. And quite honestly, it's playing out that way in the NHL, right? If you can't slash and hook and clutch and grab, they're letting their stars be stars rather than big guys, big bodies, or goons slow it down.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
As much as we love those guys, those are not what people are paying tickets. People aren't buying tickets to see those guys.
They're not buying tickets to see those guys.
And so it has opened up the game for smaller guys, more skilled guys, to do their thing. So I think it's been a good thing. I think it's been a good thing for both the NBA and the NHL.
And the other part of the caller's question was, did David Poyle start shaping his roster
edge
with the game going that way?
Well,
yeah,
I think he did.
I think he did. But I don't know if he had an edge over anybody else. I just think that he had the vision to adapt to, okay, here's how the rules are going to be. How do I want my roster going?
Yeah.
You still see some teams that say, oh, I need that big. I need that size. I need the size. Well, you can have the size, but if they can't skate, you're going to have a tough time. Now, big guys who can skate.
May see them first round. Either L.A. or Anaheim.
Well, and those teams certainly have that part of it, but they also have some guys who can skate.
Yeah, but, I mean, of course you still have to have guys, but still they play the older brand of heavy, you know, physical.
And there's nothing wrong with that if they can skate.
You do wonder if Anaheim, when this crop, this core, because a lot of these guys are at the end, if they will come up with, you know, kind of like the Devils, basically scrap the old way of doing business and try to get caught up with the times.
Yep.
Robert, what's up?
It's not the hockey. Going back to the basketball, when are they going to start doing something in college basketball? These referees are letting these guards get away with every time they dribble and a guy gets within 2 feet of them, they snap their head back and the referee call a foul. Or they go up for a three-point play and don't even get touched and fall down like somebody shot them with a gun. Wonder why they can't put in the same rule they have for hockey for faking it and call a foul on the guy that's falling down and not even get touched.
So yeah, what do you give them, Robert? Is embellishment just a foul then? If you have that in basketball, is it's just considered a foul?
Well, no, especially when they're going up, you know, most of the time when they're going up to the three-point play and they kick their foot out and somebody's just jumping straight up and they come down and they fall back like they get shot. Yeah, give them a penalty. Give them a foul. I'm so sick of seeing referees call it every time they're dribbling and a guy's head goes back or every time they go up for a shot and he falls down like somebody's broken his leg and they give him three shots for nothing. Just my opinion.
Feel your pain, Robert. It's tough. Look, I'll give you a prime example. Last night, I've already admitted on the show, I don't watch the NBA regular season. I think it's the most predictable sport going. We're all waiting for the Cavs to play the Raptors or the Celtics at the end in the conference final and the Warriors and the Rockets, and that's the way I view the NBA. But I caught myself watching I was watching the Blues and the Bruins, but I was also watching the Cavs and the Raptors. That was a game that intrigued me, and to Robert's point, that happened late in the game, and LeBron was furious. He gets around a screen, and they called a foul on him, and then they slow it down and show the replay. The guy just totally embellished. I think it was DeRozan, I think, if memory serves me correct, and he basically flopped. LeBron didn't even touch him, but that's what they see. And to Mike Rupp's point, which you weren't here yet, Willie, earlier, he said, because I brought up Anderson being here tonight, and he's kind of known for being a flopper in net, and a lot of guys – and he said, I understand, though, why guys do it. He said, let me give you a prime example. He said, when I played, I would do the right thing, and I may get high-sticked in the face, and then when the play is dead and there's no call, I go over to the ref and I say, hey, man, I got blood on my lip. I got high-sticked. And he goes, well, he said the ref will go, well, you didn't snap your head back, so I didn't see anything. He's like, I'm trying to, you know, he's like, so what's my reward? I didn't snap my head back, and so I don't get the penalty when it was a penalty. So, yeah, I guess there is a little bit of gamesmanship
selling
where you do
you
have to sell it. You have to sell it.
It's a fine line. It's a sell it, a fine line between selling it and embellishing it. But I do think that's a challenge. Rick Byrd said it in terms of college basketball, as the caller just pointed out. The way they have opened up the game some with the 30-second shot clock and trying to do the same thing they've done in the NBA, limit the hand-checking, the grabbing, and the clutching, it's opened up driving lanes. But he said it's really hard to defend. And he sympathizes a lot with the defender who has to try to do that. When a guy's able to kind of sit back, put his head down, and just take it at you, it's hard to guard without there being any contact. So that's hard.
So you want them to do the right thing and sell it because it actually was a foul, but then unfortunately you get a lot of people selling things that aren't fouls, and that's a prime example. And to Robert's point, you see it in college, you see it in the pros. I mean, you see it all the time, and it makes it extremely difficult for the officials. I mean, I know it's easy to pile on them, but it's hard, man. It really is. And when they show it, when they slow it down and we're all at home and we watch it, yeah, it's like, oh, my gosh, you totally missed that. But guess what? They're seeing it live action. They don't get that luxury, and they have to make an instantaneous decision, and it's to blow the whistle and call the foul. I want to talk to you about weight loss management. It's an ever-increasing field that's full of empty promises and yo-yo dieting and dangerous diet supplements. You guys know the list. You guys, as adults, we've probably all wanted to lose weight at some point in our adult life, and you've probably experimented with all of that or at least looked into it. But at Cool Springs MD, they want to provide you a safe and effective weight loss management solution with the support, of course, of Dr. Jeffrey Lodge, who is the board-certified physician, his wife Daphne, who is the registered nurse, and they have been helping folks right here in this area, right here in Middle Tennessee, become healthier and happier for over 20 years. They know each case is different, and their professional staff at Cool Springs MD, they're very passionate about giving you the one-on-one attention that you deserve. You can go over there and take a tour of their state-of-the-art facility, and it is nice. Meet with their on-site trainers and counselors and learn more about weight loss management. Find out your options today and how to achieve a healthy lifestyle by making an appointment at 615-660-6900. That's 660-6900. Make that appointment. Or you can visit their website, coolspringsmd.com. You know who you are. Good tune to bring us back from the break. Tonight's the Predators and Maple Leafs. Toronto in the house. Be a lot of intrigue around the hockey circles and world on tonight here in Smashville. Oh, we have a final, Julian? You're saying that in our ear?
Let's see.
Joker it.
Dun, dun.
Can we get some KHL music? Kidding.
Do they have their?
I don't know.
Does it sound like a Russian hat dance song, or you know?
I don't even know what that means.
Russian? What's the Russian in?
Was 2-1? We have a 2-1 final.
I'm not seeing it.
2-1 final?
2-1 final. What's going on with the link I have?
CSKA. They are winners. Today they are winners. They have defeated Joker at 2-1.
Why is my Twitter thing not blowing up? I'm not seeing.
Series is over, I guess.
Guys trying to
pull
my
Julian,
leg.
I don't see it yet, but I'll take his word for it. Ellie Tolvanen watch could be starting right now.
I'm still not seeing it. What am I? Am I just watching a bizarro Twitter?
Our intern Harry literally Googled KHL scores and it popped right up. 2-1. Xavier's coming home apparently.
All right, intern Harry says it's over.
Technically, Google, the internet said it's over.
Austin Matthews set to return to the ice after missing 1 month exactly today.
Yeah, he's missed the last 10.
He's been out since February 22nd, and he is supposed to be back and joining his team tonight against the Predators. This is a very good team. Now, I want to, before we get into that, watching the games last night, I was watching the Bruins and the Blues are still alive. They're not going away. But we can cross another team off the list, Willie. The Flames are done.
They're done.
They're no longer lit. They have been extinguished. Calgary is out. They got shut out at home last night to the Ducks. You can cross them off the list. That leaves Dallas and St. Louis vying for a wild card spot. Outside, teams on the outside looking in. So down to two. And right now, any more from Dallas, any more on the bad side of things, I think we're getting pretty close to to scrapping them, right? What, have they lost six in a row?
Well, let's just take a look at what Dallas would need to do to get in there. Their odds are way down. But remember, you're still alive as long as you're alive. Unless you've been mathematically eliminated. But they have 84 points right now. They're down to 18% getting in. So for them to get in and get the 96 points, they've got to win at least 6 out of 8 to have a realistic shot. So could they do that? Yeah, but right now they're not playing at that level, and they don't have Ben Bishop. So, like, the Flames are done. Like, they could win them all, and they're probably still going to come up short.
Out.
Dallas still has a heartbeat, but they're going to have to get on it. I think people sitting in these chairs back in 2008 would have said the Predators are done. But they won. They went 5-0-1, and they snuck in there. So it can happen. And they even snuck in with one game to spare. Then they mailed it in the last game. They knew they clinched, and so they didn't have to win the last game. So there still can be twists and turns, but it's not looking good for Dallas right now. They have to all of a sudden catch fire and change the course of their season. Colorado, on the other hand, is in great shape. Colorado could go 5-5, and they still have a 90% chance of getting in. So their road is a lot easier.
Looks like intern Harry, according to Twitter, has given us bad information.
That's what I was going to say. I just have not seen it.
We're getting people tweeting us saying
it's still tied
1-1.
Yeah. I'm looking at
13 minutes left.
I'm looking at a feed of the game. It still says 1-1.
So we jumped the gun.
See? Got to be sure. I mean, we know that the Twitter, there's some people that are really into this stuff. The Predator fans, they are, every time somebody breathes in that game, they're tweeting something about it. I would think that as soon as it's over, there's going to be a big celebration.
Yeah, it would be odd that they would be eliminated and we're not seeing anything on Twitter. That would be odd. Tolvanen did score in that game, but it was
challenged.
It was
for
challenged,
offside. Yeah.
Offsides, no goal. People are saying Colonel Turris has weighed in on
Colonel Turris
on Twitter and says there's no way this game is done yet.
Yeah, Harry, look at the wrong day apparently. Yeah.
Come on, Harry.
Harry, let's go.
That was game. He looked at game. The game was a Tuesday. Was 2-1. So that was a final.
So we got it. Thank you, Colonel
Turris. We can confirm that Tuesday's game is over. That was a final.
Preds enthusiast. Everybody else on Twitter that told us, "Hey, Jogger's not dead. Not done yet." What do you see? What are you expecting tonight?
Tonight,
other than just a really, really fun hockey game.
Tonight, I think the key is going to be special teams. In particular, the power plays, if you want to look at it that way. Both teams are good penalty-killing teams. You got one red-hot power play that's been carrying their team, and you've got one power play that right now can't buy a goal. And the Predators and they're both good power plays in general for the season. But the Predators are one for the last 27 in the power play. It's really odd. But they are certainly due to come back around and explode. So we'll see how that works against the team. On the other side, the Maple Leafs have got 9 power play goals, and I think in the last 6 games or something. I got to double check this. But they've been on fire with their power play. And they're adding Austin Matthews back into the lineup tonight. As you mentioned, he's missed the last 10 games. So they're lethal. Where the Predators have the advantage, I think, is on the back end. They have deeper defense, and they've had better goaltending, although Freddie Anderson has had a really good year for the Maple Leafs. But the other night, the Leafs had a 3-0 lead in Tampa, couldn't hold on to it. So that I'm sure is going to be the emphasis for Mike Babcock tonight.
3-0 lead in Tampa. They gave up 3 in the third to lose. Didn't even get a point out of it. Yikes. Up 3-1 going into the third. You're going to need to watch out for it's easy to get caught up in the star power, especially with Austin Matthews coming back into the mix, but watch out for 25. James Van Riemsdyk has had a tremendous year. 33 goals this year? My goodness. Did anybody see that coming?
He's a free agent. He's been a consistent goal scorer, but this has to be his best year.
I would say so.
And he's a guy that they're probably not going to be able to re-sign. He's going to be probably $6 million or higher per season on the free agent market, and probably in that Kyle Turris 6 years, $6 million kind of range, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
Good power forward, net presence. He's going to score goals.
Getting constant updates now. 8:31 to go. Still tied at one. Love Twitter. Love Twitter. Thank you, guys. All right, we'll come back. Paul Biancardi, you're going to want to hear this conversation. The NCAA tournament picking back up tonight. Four more games. We're going to discuss them with him next on 102.5 The Game.